And welcome to the Rock and Roll Survivors Podcast, dedicated to those in front of the curtain, behind the curtain, and somewhere in between. So let's get started. Well, Patty Quatro, what started off in the spring of 1968 as a mere 9-day stint at the Teen Spectacular, promoted by Pat O'Day in the Pacific Northwest, turned into a phenomenally magical, is there a better word than magical, 3-month-long summer tour where the Pleasure Seekers opened up for Eric Burdon and the Animals. You headlined your own gigs a lot. You did live TV shows, plural. You got so much great press. And of course, the Pleasure Seekers Together Club, your official fan club, gets launched. And the band, your roadie and Dar's boyfriend, by the way, Gil Kiper, and your manager, Leo Fenn, your sister Arlene's husband, are now heading back across country, back home to Detroit. What a whirlwind, my dear. Hello. And I'm wondering if you have any final thoughts as the band was packing up to leave the Northwest, knowing that you were heading home. And we do have a couple gigs to talk about, but just give us some thoughts.
Well, the fan club activities were in full gear. They were still going on because it had been solidly started by Marvin Sterling as president, Kathy Perry as secretary, and then Kathy Perry takes over later on. They had newsletters going out to the members and the bios and info on the winter tour when it would bring pleasure seekers back. So they actually had started having like a meeting now and then. It was so cute. And they began to distribute buttons and membership cards and all that kind of paraphernalia. And Kathy is our main contact because she's been running a lot of that stuff and she's real involved in it. And we keep in touch by letter too. So fans are able to write us and have an answer with a personal letter. It was pretty cool.
That is really cool. And also on the previous episode, we could not remember Marvin's last name, who at the moment in time was the fan club president. So it's Marvin Sterling. But
Yes.
soon thereafter, he will be out and Kathy Perry takes over. And she's going to be a big part of the rest of this season now because she
Oh,
is
yeah.
involved with the band. So I also wanted to clarify something. I made the mistake, and it was probably because I was so excited to hear you finally tell us about your little flings that you were having. So you were talking about the band Fever Tree and that you dated John Tuttle. I referred to him as Jeff Tuttle. So just to correct the record, it is definitely John Tuttle of Fever Tree. And so, Patty, do you want to say anything else about this summer fling?
Oh, it was a great band. He was a great guy. You know, we connected. It was pretty cool. Yeah, while we were in the Northwest.
Well, and just to clarify, Fever Tree opened up for you, the Pleasure Seekers. I love
Great.
that.
They had a lot of albums out and stuff, you know, and they did pretty good through their stint
I
in
love
the
that.
music. Yeah.
That's cool. So, okay, you're heading back to Detroit now. This is months on the road, but you do have two gigs in particular that are booked. One in Santa Barbara, California, at Vandenberg Air Force Base. It's now a Space Force base, but it was back then an Air Force base.
Yeah.
And the other one was in Denver, Colorado. So, Patty, tell us how all of this came about. Again, you're leaving Seattle, so you drive south down to California for this gig. And a reminder that this is during the Vietnam War in the fall of 1968. So, tell us anything you want about this gig at Vandenberg.
Yes, it was an Air Force base. This was an episode with another crazy plane issue, which we've already told about the other one going to Oregon for the TV show. We started down through Oregon and our car broke down. And I'm not sure whether it was Pat O'Day that stepped in to help or someone else, maybe from the Air Force base. I don't know. But we had to leave our car and trailer and end up on another tiny plane to get to the gig. Well, I mean, always us with the planes. The pilot radioed. He could only put on minimum equipment because it was going to be too heavy. It was such a tiny plane. So we took our guitars, and that was pretty much it. We couldn't take the drums, we couldn't take PA or any of the equipment. And the pilot radioed saying the flight was such and such heavy. I don't know what he said, but he was saying the word heavy. It was like, oh, okay. Are we going to crash? And you know, we were a little freaked out. He had trouble getting off the ground. And someone had also arranged for equipment setup. So we only took the essentials. And they had to supply us with amps and drums and PA. And then going back to retrieve our car and trailer. And that was on a small passenger plane. So we were okay on that one going back. It was a great gig with fun and flirting, being our first interaction with hot military men. They were very enthusiastic. So it turned out really well. The food was hideous. I do remember that. And it's sort of a precursor to future gigs we did for the military. This was our first experience with that.
I have a couple of questions. We have been talking about the lingo of the day on the previous episode about how the music was getting heavier. And it's funny that in this case, on a plane ride, that heavy was not necessarily a good thing. In this case, with all of your heavy equipment. So, but also the luck that they had drums for you.
They had to pull it together. I mean, they had the booking, so they, you know, it's the military. They did it somehow. I don't know. They
That's
got it figured out.
wonderful. That's wonderful. So you're well received by them, if not more so. Flirting going on. Do you remember your set list? Did you do one set? Did you play a couple times in the evening? Anything you remember?
No, it would have been a show set, that we put our best stuff together. And that's what it would have been. I'm positive about that.
Well, I wish that there were some photos of you playing to these military guys and seeing this back and forth flirtation. So after this wonderfully fun and flirty evening at Vandenberg, you then take a very different turn, pun intended here, or metaphor intended, whatever it is. Tell us about this incredibly scary moment on your drive.
It was so scary. We had to go through the Rocky Mountains, Loveland Pass, which is a known treacherous drive, especially in winter, as the highest mountain pass in Colorado at nearly 12,000 feet. And you are like on the edge of danger, okay? We got stuck as we started through in a hideous and dangerous snowstorm as we were driving. It was way too late to turn around, and there was no possible way to turn around on that pass. On one curve, we started sliding toward the edge with one tire dangerously near going over. Leo and Gil had to jump out in the storm and try to help push and steer the car back on the road safely with that tire. We had to drive and steer with the windows totally open in case things went south, and we had to jump out of the windows, and get out of the car if it started sliding. Of course, Leo and Gil would have been in horrible danger if that happened. They would have gone off the cliff. It was a harrowing moment, and thank God we got through Loveland Pass to Denver.
That's
Wow.
horrible. That's so terrifying. Did you, I mean, you obviously were experiencing this, but did you know at that moment in time that that was really, that you could go off the edge?
Oh, we were freaking. Yeah, we were freaking. The snow, it was like a blizzard. And, there was nowhere to turn. We had to continue, and they had to try to get the tire back on. Oh, yes, we were petrified.
Petrified. Well, thank goodness that everything turned out and now you get to this gig in Denver, or maybe it didn't turn out.
No, it didn't continue.
So first of all, do you remember the name of the club? And it was supposed to be a 2-week stint in Denver, yes.
Yes, no, I don't remember the name at all. Guy was real nice. He was so excited to have us. And Dar went to do a radio interview, and she just had a brain, mishmash in her brain. She said her real age. And this was a club that we needed our ID to be valid. And the venue owner heard the interview. We were underage. We lost 2 weeks. He had to fire us. He said, "I can't put you in there. I don't want to lose my liquor license." He was so upset and sorry, but he had to let us go. We didn't do the 2 weeks. We had to continue on our way home.
Oh, that's just, oh, that is, I feel so sorry for all of you, the club owner as well. And
Yeah.
those fake IDs were not always coming in handy. So,
Not when she says it right on the radio,
Dar, what were you thinking? But on the other hand, I wouldn't know that the club owner was going to be listening, but
Yeah, she
still.
didn't. She just goofed. She goofed.
They goof. So did you, on the way back, now still to Detroit, did you try and get any other bookings or? What was the itinerary?
No, we just, after that happened, I mean, that was an empty 2 week, we just drove up to go home. That was it. And we got home and had more stuff, going on there. We
That's
were glad to
well.
be home for a little respite,
Well, and in September, on September 25th, still 1968, you're back home now for this respite in Detroit, but you do still play. And as I said before, but it really. I want the listeners to take this in. You've been gone for months. You left, I mean, you were in Miami and then you were in the Pacific Northwest for what was supposed to be a 9-day stint. And then suddenly you're there for months on end. And so you're home, you're playing gigs, but you're also now coming home to your homeboys and your friends and your family. And so tell us anything you want about seeing your friends, your homeboys, the Amboy Dukes, and having this wonderful reunion of sorts.
Oh, it was amazing. We really didn't play. I think we only played one or two gigs because we had had that 2 weeks off and we traveled home. We got home pretty quick. So by that time, it was September 25th, and we went to and Amboy Duke's gig. And it was so cool to see them. We had been gone for so long. You have to remember, we were still such a novelty in the world of music. We were one of the earliest Detroit bands to get out of Michigan and traveling all over, north, east, south, west, Canada. So we were a bit ahead of the game as far as our homeboys' bands, right? So they were very good friends of ours, and we had played many gigs with them in the past, and they had out a happening single, Journey to the Center of the Mind, which we had sort of missed, you know, and it was a great single. We were so excited. They were so excited. Ted Nugent was a real straight guy. And if you listen to the lyrics, you can see what he was all about. I mean, we loved the lyrics. It's about really, you know, engaging your mind. He wasn't into drugs at all. So we partied after, and it was good to see them again. And we were all so excited about their single doing well.
Well, and they must have been so excited to see all of you and knowing that the Pleasure Seekers were doing
Yes.
so well. Proud
Yeah.
Detroiters. That's just wonderful. And so you do play one gig, which we don't really have any information about, but it is worth mentioning. It's September 27th. It's at the Black Boot, and we do
Yes.
have a press poster, and it was a place in Detroit. So again, and it was sold out, which is exciting.
Yep. First one back home, you know, first gig back home. So that was a fun gig.
Oh, absolutely. The crowd must have been so excited to see you. And so we've talked about this in the previous episode, but it was in the Pacific Northwest that Pat O'Day was really encouraging you not only to start playing heavier because he thought the way you played live was much more representative of the group versus how you came off in your turntable hits, but Pat O'Day is now really, really encouraging you to start writing original music. And again, we touched upon this on the last time. But he's saying, stop listening to the male suits at Mercury who are benefiting from you monetarily by keeping it to the staff writers, by keeping it to them. Whereas if you were going to write your own music, that you'd have more ownership, literally. So I think that's very important for you to touch upon. But also, again, he was trying to blend or fuse original music with this heavier sound, and really saw you as, in his words, the top music band in the pop scene today. And he really wanted to see that happen for you. So, talk about any of this.
Yeah, we were definitely making strides in the flirtation of writing and our original ideas. And we had plenty of time in the car on the way home because we couldn't do it while we were on tour. And two songs were beginning to be fashioned. And the idea came up that we could record a couple in Detroit on our own, of our own originals when we finished them. And we discussed a lot about October bookings coming out during that time, Hawaii, the Far East, Europe possibilities. And of course, in winter, we would be doing a return Christmas tour in PNW. As we got home, the bookings filled up real quickly in October and November. I mean, really quick. And we were on the road again. We would be starting again in quick order after this small rest, but it did give us time to think about our writing and what we needed to do.
Well, the seeds of those two songs are where we're going to pick up in the next couple of episodes to talk about this, because the question I have is, how did you even approach writing original music? Were you inspired by a certain band, a certain frame that you were interested in? So, thoughts that I want to pick up on for you, because the songs really do, the two songs that we're talking about, and yes, we're being cryptic for a reason, the two songs that you write that are originals really do take the Pleasure Seekers into a whole new direction. I would
Yeah.
say not only musically, but the personality of the band now will be shifting. It's now you're taking on more social issues. So, but for now, Patty, I think it's incredible to think about how much has happened for you and the band over the course of 1968. And we are so not even close to being done, and the things that are going to happen even just in the next few months before the end of the year. So again, we talked about flirting with your writing. You are going to be recording these two songs in October. I can't wait again to discuss more. And I really want to talk about now the other things that are going to be occurring in the next few months before the end of the year. And I don't think we can separate the two anymore because There is continuing growing pains within the band that will have a huge impact on all of you as well as collectively. And this includes, most especially in this moment, the continual fraying of Leo and Arlene's marriage. And this had started to really take root over the summer, but it was definitely ongoing. And I want to talk about what was going on for you at this moment in time.
Okay, well, they did start having more tension in their marriage. It was getting worse and escalating, but somehow the band, we kept the band out of their issues, and so did they. It didn't involve us. You know, they were very professional about keeping it private. You know, so the band went on, the bookings went on, they were both doing their jobs, but of course, we knew Arlene was unhappy. Leo, also Catholic, wanted to save the marriage. Her marriage had become more of a brother-sister feeling in her mind, and feeling like she missed out of her coming of age. You know, she's pouring out her heart to Kathy Perry, our fan club secretary, and Susie. And Arlene was broaching the idea of divorce. Leo, not so much. And they would make up, and nothing would change. And Arlene was still gung-ho on the band. Frankly, it was her bright spot and salvation.
And you, Patty, as the band leader, I mean, this must have been very hard for you. So, and let alone that this is your sister and this is your brother-in-law. So, this is a longtime family member and you're watching all of this. But again, you're having this momentum that's going on with the band. And then suddenly there's internal conflict going on. What were you thinking, Patty, during all of these fall months?
You know, I understood it all. We'd come through that hippie era and all that. But Arlene had grown up. I understood all the issues. Arlene had grown up in a buttoned-up, pigeonholed era for women. Graduate, get married. She was with her high school sweetheart without much dating, have kids. As she told it, I would be Harriet Housewife. And she hated that term, but that's what she felt she was, as most of the women in those times. And she realized that it She felt more like a brother-sister relationship. She was trying to make sense of what she had brought into. I understood it, feeling trapped, what she had missed, you know, of society's expectations of women. I noticed that she felt so joyful and free on the road, being nutty and cutting up, more happy, more loose. It was obvious. And it was very sad when I had to look at Leo. It was a great guy, and he was so loved her, and we all loved him as part of our family. So, in a word, the continuing non-final decision that they were struggling with was a really sad time for all of us. But again, they kept it more private.
Well, Patty, I'm going to make you say a little bit more because I didn't ask you what Arlene's reasoning was for having these conflicts. And we do have that wonderful conversation that you and I did with your sister. So, and I'm teasing you when I say that, but I really want to hear from you as a band leader. Were you worried that this was going to break up the band? I really am curious about this because it's your manager and your organist. Forgetting
Yeah.
it's your sister and your brother-in-law. So this could be more lineup changes, but a manager is a big deal. So I really just, even in a few words, tell me what you were thinking if you remember.
Oh, I felt so much about it. The interesting thing about personal issues when they come up, the spotlight was still on the band and it continued to grow no matter what was going on personally. And we were all still, all of us, including Arlene and Leo, were still so committed to the band. And we're starting to get, you know, we had gotten in all that advice from Pat O'Day and Mickey and our dad. All of it began to inhabit our minds, especially me as a band leader. We did not really want to make any momentum-stopping moves, yet we felt this loud, ringing noise of all this advice given us. And now this thing going on with Arlene and Leo and possible turning points on our next stop, you know, steps forward. Oh my God, our
Well,
heads were filled with it all.
I'm sure your heads were filled with it all. And again, as you're saying, all of this is going on. Internal conflicts, the momentum of the band, the escalation of this, and the spotlight is fully on you, shining bright. And this is Pat O'Day is in Leo's ear about Mercury Records, and maybe they're too old school at this point in terms of how they're viewing you, this heavier all-female rock band, and potentially pushing you to look for a new label. And as you said, your dad, who's old school, right? He was a musician, but he's old school, is saying, you know what, play the game for a little while. You're not that well known yet. Stick there, and just ride it out. And then your brother Mickey, Michael Quatro, who's kind of in the middle of this, is like, well, he didn't know, but I do think your brother understood the biz better than anyone, even Leo, and he too was undecided. So he did understand Pat O'Day's take, but he also understood your dad's take because he was a booker as well, which is just play the game, get more attention, and move on. So again, you in the middle of all of this, because I know Leo, I know your dad, I know everybody brought you into this conversation. What were you thinking? And did you have a say in any of this?
You know what? I felt that at this time, at this moment, and I think most of the band felt the same way, but I'm telling you how I felt. The band all of a sudden was growing to a more adult and quickly growing independent, the key word here, desire to own our own future and make our own decisions now, come what may. It was difficult with lots for all of us pleasure seekers to figure out in our next moves, and damn fast, no time to waste. I now had a new fire lit under my ass.
Where things are really hot. Come along if you can.